we need to put the right material in the right place at the right time. I genuinely see great opportunity for timber and steel in hybrid buildings to be an optimised solution.
Kia ora, I'm Troy, here as Chief Executive, and welcome to Stirring the Pot. Thanks for connecting. If you're new, here's what you can expect. We're going to be talking the tough stuff, the things that keep us metal minds up at night. There are many challenges facing our industry and equally many opinions on how we should tackle them. Stirring the Pot provides a facilitated forum to discuss and challenge these viewpoints.
So let's get to the nuts and bolts of it. Today we're having a korero with Robert Finch. Robert is director of Timber Unlimited and is also a member of HERA's Industry Advisory Group for the Low Carbon Design Framework for Low-Rise Buildings project. He has a background in mechanical engineering and materials engineering, has managed research and product development, and set research directions for the past 23 years.
Robert, tell us a bit about yourself and your role with Timber Unlimited.
Thank you, Troy. So just a tiny bit about myself. I'm originally an Australian, I'm a dual citizen now. Came here to New Zealand in 2004, have a background in mechanical engineering and materials engineering, and have spent some time in Australia in the coal mining industry, some time in the textile industry, and about 10 years ago, a period in the timber industry when I led a thing called the Structural Timber Innovation Company, STIC, when we developed post-tension timber design guides, and then I led the Quake Centre, which was hosted at Canterbury University, which was an initiative after the earthquakes for perhaps obvious reasons. And here I am now in Timber Unlimited as of 1 year ago, basically.
Yeah. Awesome. Some of our listeners are going to find it a bit strange having a timber guy on our Stirring the Pot podcast. What are your views around the perceptions of that there's intermaterial competition and maybe the reality where there's intermaterial collaboration?
Yeah, look, it is a good question, and I know it perhaps seems a bit strange that you've got timber here talking with HERA, but frankly, I welcome it with open arms. I think it's really important because in the end, and as an engineer, honestly, we need to put the right material in the right place at the right time. And we'll talk more about this later, I'm sure, but I genuinely see great opportunity for timber and steel in hybrid buildings to be an optimised solution in many respects down the track. So that's why I'm really happy to be here.
Awesome. And I just want to put it on the record too that that's HERA's position. We don't advocate particularly for steel being better than any other material. We think every material has its place, and it largely comes down to design as well. So how do you feel about joining HERA's Low Carbon Design Project Industry Advisory Group? And do you see that there is positive collaboration possible between the materials through this project?
Yes, thank you. No, look, I'm actually really excited about being part of that industry advisory group. And for the same reason, I think I welcome the fact that you have invited cross-disciplinary and cross-materials input and representation onto that advisory group, because I think for that initiative to get the best outcomes for the built environment and for New Zealand's position in future in the building and construction sector, you know, we've all got something to contribute, and therefore it's important that, I mean, it'd be stupid for us to sit on the outside and criticise what you're doing, just as I'd like to think you would think the same about something we might have did if the boot was on the other foot. We actually need to talk to each other. We need to collaborate, and that's why I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I think HERA's got a long history of really close collaboration with Concrete, obviously, but in the same way that Concrete has a lot of steel in it, timber design also requires a lot of steel. So it seems silly that we haven't had closer collaborations as well. What is the connection that you see between structural steel and structural timber?
Well, there are many, actually. There are many, truly. I mean, if you go back far enough with structural timber, you know, the historic and traditional ways of making timber joints and timber connections in larger structures was to use great big mortise and tenon type jointing and really traditional joining techniques to join one member to another or multiple members to each other. And whilst that's still possible, it's probably, and there are examples of it that architects will like to see in different places, the more pragmatic approach is that timber actually it works with steel, and that we use considerable amounts of steel when it comes to connecting members together in the various forms. Yeah, in all honesty, to put up a mass timber building, we use quite a bit of steel to ensure that we get the right sort of optimised and economically efficient connection systems, basically. So the two are quite partnered in that respect.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a shame that, you know, sometimes people view us as competing materials that really don't work together and are trying to make everything all steel or everything all timber or everything all concrete, but really we're all integrated.
Yeah.
What is your view on the collaboration between steel and timber in the development of steel timber composite structural elements and systems for use in New Zealand's built environment?
I think it's really important, and it probably that collaboration in structural systems expands and becomes greater. I mean, there's the obvious integration in a purely connection perspective that we just talked about, but beyond that, you know, there's a much bigger opportunity for the materials, the three materials really, but today I'm just more focused on the two being steel and concrete. There is a big opportunity, I believe, to go down this path of hybrid buildings where, you know, part of the structural system can be steel, part of it can be timber. And that can be done in an optimised way in many cases where the client actually gets the right sort of cost outcome from it. If it was an all steel building, it would undoubtedly have a higher embodied carbon than it would if it was an all timber building. But on the other hand, if it was a steel timber composite, just for example, gravity frames from steel or timber and CLT floors, for example, then you've now got a composite structure or a hybrid structure which will have a significantly reduced embodied carbon footprint, an optimised cost which makes it commercially viable. So everyone wins if we keep using the right material in the right place. And so I'm really, really keen to see that happen and to expand. And you know, to the extent, honestly, Troy, our mantra really is not, you might think this is a bit odd, but it's not more timber buildings, it's actually more timber in buildings. And that, so there's a little play on words there, but it's about recognising that for a decade or more, the best thing we can do is have the right materials in the right place. And so I believe we can put more timber into what otherwise would have been an all concrete or an all steel building. That doesn't mean we don't put some steel or concrete in it. The two have to work together.
Yeah, it's how the materials are complementing each other and really optimising the design.
That's right, yeah.
Is Timber Unlimited open to facilitating collaboration for the advancement of steel timber hybrid systems and encompassing both composite and non-composite variations? What role do you think that Timber Unlimited can play in this collaboration? And what also do you think HERO can do to support that?
Yeah, look, we're definitely open to it, absolutely open to it and welcome the opportunities in front of us to collaborate more, particularly recognising the potential benefits and the optimisation we can get out of hybrid design, both for the climate and for the tenants and for the clients. So I think there's things that more things that we can do. What can HERA do? I guess selfishly, you could maybe help your partners, your subscribers, your followers to recognise that actually there is a place for timber and it's not all bad and we shouldn't think of each other as the enemies. So it's just that shift in mindset and because effectively, you know, we need to do the same and make sure that our designers and specifiers who have a persuasion towards timber recognise that there's optimised solutions out of the two. So I think, you know, what can HERA do? Well, I think just help break down the perhaps negative perception that why would we go near timber? Isn't timber the enemy, etc.? Just help break that down, and likewise for us on the other side. What can we do together? I foresee that, you know, at a more technical level, we actually could look to put together some quite sophisticated and advanced workshops on actually how you actually combine the two materials at a design and specification level in different types of building topologies, because there are differences, and sometimes if you put the wrong material in the wrong place, you won't end up with the right cost structure, and so it's probably not going to happen anyway. So I think that we could get to a detailed level of collaboration around workshops and the like, to be mm-hmm. honest with you.
Yep, it's definitely been on our radar to start to get more into that area of research. So we're definitely open to that collaboration.
In our formative strategy development days, which was towards in the third quarter last year, we talked a lot about within our strategic development workshops. So how do we work? What is our position with HERA? What is our position with CCANS? How are we going to work with them? How because we can't ignore each other. So the fact that you instigated this or HERA instigated this, I'm just saying I'm really thankful for. I think it's a healthy sign, and it's something I'd like us to be able to do in a reciprocating fashion at some point in the not too distant future. And by the way, Troil, in relation to you know, things that we can do and collaborate on, you know, we are, just to give an example of the fact that we're quite focused on hybrid buildings, on the 2nd of November this year, we're actually running a seminar during the day in Auckland, which is absolutely targeting hybrid buildings. And that's the day of the gala dinners for the Timber Design Awards, which will be run in the evening on the 2nd. So that's just a really good example of how we are truly thinking about hybrid and how important it is in the future. We've actually got a seminar on that same day, which is focused on that topic.
What do you see as the future of that relationship between steel and timber? What's going to happen in the future?
Ultimately, I hope that that relationship will grow. I hope that you know, if you want me to put a vision out there, that in 10 years' time you'd look down Queen Street and there would be every other building that was a hybrid building, and that timber actually was partnering with steel, for example, and concrete in new structures which were better optimised, giving a lower carbon footprint for the building and construction sector, but still commercially viable and providing the benefits to the tenants and lessees and so on that that are being more often sought after now. By having some visual timber, we don't have to use timber everywhere. That's what I'm saying. We can use steel in combination with timber. So my hope is that we'll actually advance this collaboration fairly rapidly, because it's actually getting a bit urgent, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And just referencing some of our earlier comments around sustainability and also design dictating performance, how do you feel about those discussions that, I don't know, they seem to happen regardless of what, you know, organisationally we're putting out there, that compare one material to the other and say this has the advantage of lower embodied carbon at module A and this has the advantage of lower carbon at module D. How do you think the conversation should be? What needs to change, do you think?
Yeah, and I think there's two interlinked things there. And one is about the treatment of embodied carbon and the entire carbon life cycle. And the other is that early estimation at concept stage particularly around price and optimization of building topology at a very early stage so that you get a definite improvement in embodied carbon, you get an overall design which gives a definite improvement in operational emissions and a good outcome at end of life. And we could get into the end of life debate, Troy, if you want to, but I think there's work there for all of us to do, to be perfectly frank, and I'm anticipating we will actually get into quite a bit of that in your new project, of which I'm on honoured to be on the advisory committee for, or one of the members on the advisory committee for. So I think we'll actually get into quite a bit of that along the way. But look, the point is people don't really think about carbon in the right sort of cycles. You know, to think of even our building code, Troy, you know, our building code says, well, a permanent building has a life of 50 years. Honestly, I know there probably has to be a number somewhere, but I mean, there are timber structures around the world that have been standing for 1,000 years. And so just this notion of something's come to an end of life just because it's ticked on 50 years, I think we have to get to the point of challenging all that in the building code. And that challenging those things will help us get to better determinations of what end-of-life carbon positions actually look like.
Yep. And definitely that'll be forming part of that project. It'll be looking at, you know, what do you do to specify early on to ensure that life spans are increased significantly, at least doubled or even quadrupled, I think are reasonable targets.
Yep. And I guess the extension of that then is, and if a building for its purpose is considered to be at end of life, but the materiality of the building is not at end of life, then we should be thinking now in an accelerated way about deconstructability, demountability, reuse, repurpose, and so on, so that all the steel elements, all the timber elements, etc., can all actually be easily dismantled because the building is no longer fit for that purpose. Perhaps a bit of rework, and then reused again for another 50 years in some other building application. So, and you know, that's an important part of the end of life story too.
Yes, definitely. I think this project will focus on, you know, the design phases, which really should be considering design for deconstruction or design for repurposing or design for reuse. And then we've got the other project that HERA is running, which is the material passport or steel structures as banks, which will be the first project in Australasia of this type where we'll be really facilitating that reuse of steel. But again, it's one of those projects where we're hoping that once we've developed the framework, it can be used for other materials as well.
Yep.
What are some of the key technical challenges that need to be overcome relating to structural timber for multi-storey?
Probably one of the most important things right at this point is a greater recognition that timber is, as a material, it's a hygroscopic material, which means it takes on moisture vapor and it gives off moisture vapor. If it gets wet, it takes on water and moisture. When the environment is drier, then it gives off moisture. And that in itself's not such a bad thing, provided it's managed properly. So that whole period between when some mass timber leaves the manufacturing facility and is incorporated into an enclosed envelope in a building, it's actually quite critical. And how it's transported, how it's stored, how it's protected, and what happens during the erection phases and so on to keep it out of the elements as much as is practicable, is really important. And I think that is actually somewhat of a challenge. Just looking around building sites around the country for the last 6 months, I know that's a challenge. Some understand it well, and some don't understand it well. And so for timber, you asked me the question, what, you know, some of the challenges. I see that as getting that right is, or improving that and getting it right for the future is a really important challenge. And to that end, we in Timber Unlimited are actually in the middle of preparing what we would, I guess, just call a best practice guide for moisture management in that period, which we intend to publish later on in the year. But that's one of the key challenges. There are a couple of others as well.
And we've been using Timber Unlimited, and some of the HERA listeners may actually be more familiar with the Timber Design Centre, which has now been rebranded as Timber Unlimited. Tell us a bit more about Timber Unlimited and anything that you think HERA members should be aware of.
Okay, so Timber Unlimited is an initiative that is underpinned by the support of four collaborating parties, which are brands, the Timber Design Society, SION, and Wood Processors and Manufacturers Association. But the funding for an establishment period, which we just completed on the 30th of June this year, has come from Te Uru Raku, which is at the Forestry Service within MPI. We now have further funding for what's we're calling a transition period for the next 3 years. And so we're just in the process of working up a new hosting arrangement, because we're not a legal entity in our own right. We're Timber Unlimited at this point, is a name, a brand, and an initiative. So we need to progress through that, and the expectation is that we will become an independent entity, legal entity, in much like HERA is, and so we need to, I guess, ensure that there is an enduring funding model that can enable that to happen. Because there has been versions of it in the past, multiple versions of it, and in the end they've all fallen over through lack of funding. I'm desperately, desperately keen to ensure that Timber Unlimited, this one that we've formed this time, actually has an enduring future, very similar to the enduring nature of HERA, so that we can actually continue to collaborate for the foreseeable future over hybrid buildings.
Awesome. That sounds great. I think we look forward to it. And HERA's coming up to its 50th year anniversary, so... it'll be exciting times, I think, how the different materials start working together more collaboratively.
Yes, totally agree. It's important. It's important for the country. It's important for the world, to be frank with you, that the building and construction sector globally actually gets to grips with this, because we're running out of time.
So there you go. Thanks for joining our conversation with Robert today. If you'd like to connect more with him, you'll find his details in the show notes. This was a great conversation today on how the timber and steel industry can work together within the construction sector. After all, unity is strength. When there is teamwork and collaboration, wonderful things can be achieved. Food for thought till we see you next time. So hit subscribe, and if you liked what you heard today, please like, review, or share with any metal minds you know. Let's spread the word. HERA is leading a project partially supported by the Building Research Levy titled Circular Design for a Changing Environment. This is focused on developing a design framework to reduce construction waste, life cycle embodied carbon, and to enhance the circular economy for construction materials with a pilot for low-rise buildings. To find out more, please contact us.